Random House Audio presents A Dark Matter by Peter Straub. Read for you by Robertson Dean. Is there an emptiness we all share? Before the end, I mean. Heaven and earth depend on this clarity. Heaven and earth. Under the gold doubloons of the fallen maple leaves, the underworld burrows in. Sick to death of the light. Charles Wright, Littlefoot. At first. A few years back, late spring. The great revelations of my adult life began with the shouts of a lost soul in my neighborhood breakfast joint. I was standing in line at the corner bakery on State and Cedar, half a block down the street from my pretty brick townhouse, waiting to order a Swiss oatmeal, muesli, or a berry parfait, granola. Anyhow, something modest. The loudest noises in the place were the tapping of laptop keys and the rustle of someone turning newspaper pages. Abruptly, with a manic indignation that seemed to come from nowhere, the man at the head of the line started uttering the word obstreperous. He started out at a level just above ordinary conversation. By the time he found his rhythm, he was about twice that volume and getting louder as he rolled along. If you had to settle on one word to yell over and over in public, wouldn't you pick something less cumbersome? Yet he kept at it, spinning those four lumpy syllables every possible way, as if trying them on for size. His motive, for nothing actually comes from nowhere, soon became obvious. Obstreperous? 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 Lady, you think I'm obstreperous now? This is what he was saying. Give me another 30 seconds. You'll learn all about obstreperous. With each repetition, his question grew more heated. The momentarily dumbfounded young woman at the order counter had offended him. He wished her to know how greatly. The guy also thought he was making himself look smart, even witty, but to everyone else in the shop, he had uncorked raving lunacy. His variations were becoming more imaginative. Obstreperous? Obstreperous? Obstreporous? To inspect this dude, I tilted sideways and looked down the good-sized line. I almost wished I hadn't. Right away, it was obvious that the guy was not simply playing around. The next man in line was giving him 6 feet of empty floor space. Under the best of circumstances, people were going to keep their distance from this character. 8 or 9 inches of white-gray hair surged out in stiff waves around his head. He was wearing a torn, slept-in, checked suit that might have been ripped off a cornfield scarecrow. Through a latticework of scabs, smears, and bruises, his swollen feet shone a glaring, bloodless white. Like me, he had papers under his elbow, but the wad of newsprint he was clamping to his side appeared to have lasted him at least 4 or 5 days. The puffed-up bare feet, scuffed and abraded like shoes, were the worst part. "Sir," said the woman at the order counter, "sir, you need to leave my store. Step away from the counter, sir, please. You need to step away." 2 huge kids in Southern Illinois sweatshirts, recent graduates by the look of them, jammed their chairs back and marched straight toward the action. This is Chicago, after all, where big, athletic-looking dudes sprout out of the sidewalks like dandelions on a suburban lawn. Without speaking to anyone, they came up on the homeless guy's flanks, hoisted him by his elbows, and transported him outside. If he had gone limp, they would have had a little trouble. But he was rigid with panic and gave them no more difficulty than would a cigar store Indian. He went stiff as a marble statue. When he went by, I took in his blubbery lips and brown, broken teeth. His bloodshot eyes had a glazed look. The man kept saying, "Obstreperous, obstreperous, obstreperous," but the word had become meaningless to him. He was using it for protection, like a totem, and he thought as long as he kept saying it, he was out of danger. When I looked into those flat, unseeing eyes, an utterly unforeseen thought jolted me. The impact felt like a blow, and brought with it a cryptic sense of illumination as brief as the flaring of a match. I knew someone like that. This terrified man with a one-word vocabulary reminded me so vividly of someone that he might have been that person, now in the act of being ejected onto Rush Street. But who in the world could it have been? No one I knew was anything like that damaged character, now staggering forward and back on the sidewalk beyond the great windows, still whispering his totemic word. A voice only I could hear said, "No one? Think again, Lee." Deep in my chest, something big and decisive, something I had been ignoring and thrusting out of view literally for decades, stirred in its sleep and twitched its leathery wings. Whatever had nearly awakened tasted, in part, like shame, but shame was by no means all of it. Although my first response was to turn away from whatever was causing my internal tumult, and turn away I did, with as much of my native resolve as I could summon, the memory of having witnessed an inexplicable illumination clung to me like a cat that had jumped onto my back and stuck its claws into my skin. The next thing I did involved a typical bit of unconscious misdirection. I tried to believe that my distress was caused by the register girl's stupid language. Maybe that sounds snobbish, and maybe it is snobbish, but I've written 8 novels, and I pay attention to the way people use words. Maybe too much attention. So, when I finally stood in front of a young woman who had told that ruined creature that he needed to leave her store, I expressed my unhappiness by ordering an Anaheim scrambler, which comes with smoked bacon, cheddar cheese, avocado, and a lot of other stuff, including hash browns and a corn muffin, too. Alas, I am one of those people who tend to use food as a way of dodging unwelcome emotions. Anyhow, when did people start framing commands in terms of neediness? And how long had people in the restaurant business been calling their establishments stores? Couldn't people see the ugliness and inaccuracy of this crap? The creature within me rolled back into its uneasy sleep, temporarily lulled. I parked myself at an empty table, snapped open my paper, The Guardian Review, then avoided looking at the big front windows until I heard one of the staff bringing my tray to me. For some reason, I turned around and glanced through the window, but of course that wretched, half-sane character had fled. Why did I care what had happened to him, anyhow? I didn't, apart from feeling a sort of generic pity for his suffering, and that poor devil did not remind me of anyone I knew or had once known. For a couple of seconds, a kind of misguided déjà vu had come into play. Nobody thought of déjà vu as anything except a momentary delusion. It gave you an odd buzz of recognition that felt like occult knowledge, but the buzz was psychic flotsam, of no value whatsoever. 45 minutes later, I was walking back to my house, hoping that the day's work would go well. The minor disturbance in the corner bakery hardly counted even as a memory anymore, except for the moment when I was sliding my key into the front door lock and saw once again his glassy, bloodshot eyes and heard him whispering, "Obstreperous, obstreperous." "I need you to stop doing that," I said out loud, and tried to smile as I stepped into my bright, comfortable foyer. Then I said, "No, I do not know anyone even faintly like you." For half a second, I thought someone was going to ask me what I was talking about, but my wife was on an extended visit to Washington, D.C., and in the whole of my splendid house, not a single living thing could hear me. Work, unfortunately, was of no use at all. I had been planning to use the days my wife was gone to get a jump start on a new novel, then known as Her Level Gaze. Never mind the total lameness of the title, which I intended to change as soon as I came up with a better one. Atop my oversized desk, a folder bulging with notes, outlines, and ideas for chapters sat beside my iMac, and a much smaller folder beside it held the 10 awkward pages I had managed so far to excrete. Once I started poking it, the novel that had seemed so promising when still a shimmer of possibility had turned into a slow-moving, snarling animal, The male protagonist seemed to be a bit slow-moving, too.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?